bear SCPs. For those unfamiliar, a bear is a dog-like carnivoran, typically seen with large bodies, stocky legs, long snouts, short tails, and clawed paws. The bear family includes the brown bear, black bear, polar bear, and even the giant panda, and are located in a wide variety of habitats around the world. Bears have been hunted for meat and fur for millions of years, and poaching still continues to this day, including thousands of bears that are kept in captivity in Asia to harvest their bile for traditional medicine. I think with that, we have a long enough intro that I can move on to talking about some SCPs that feature bears or bear-related anomalies. Let's take a look. Let's start with SCP-1313, an anomalous series of logical processes capable of being defined as a mathematical equation to which the answer is a single brown bear. The equation itself isn't anomalous, but rather it's a quirk of mathematics that results in it producing a tangible, frequently enraged bear instead of a number. The equation doesn't need to be written or otherwise physically represented for this to occur, as simply considering the problem long enough to arrive at the solution can result in a bear's manifestation. More so, the equation doesn't require any particular mathematical ability to comprehend, outside of a basic understanding of elementary algebra. But the entire equation must be completed in order to result in a bear. Research has shown several new pieces of information regarding the anomaly, including that the equation conforms to all axioms used in current number theory, and the bears can't be returned to numerical form simply by solving the equation's inverse. This would require the invention of a method of applying mathematical operations to physical objects. The anomaly can also be used as an element in other equations to produce semi-anomalous results, such as solving for the square root of a live grizzly bear, or multiplying two live grizzly bears together. It's not recommended to solve such derivative equations, however, as the creatures produced are usually poorly integrated into reality and are invariably extremely hostile during their brief periods of existence. That being said, research into the possible military applications of irrational, exponential, and imaginary grizzly bears is currently being undertaken by a joint team of the Foundation's mathematical and zoological departments. It's also been determined that grizzly bears exist within the set of all real numbers, and are not prime, although the square root of a grizzly bear is prime. It's also the only prime number that is not a cardinal number, is neither even nor odd, and contains an animal component. The implications that the root of a bear is an integer and therefore that bears exist on an ordinary number line are currently being investigated. SCP-1313 first came to the Foundation's attention in 1967 when a bear attack was reported at White Cross High School in England. 1,724 separate bear attacks at educational institutes have been observed since then, with an estimated 1,600 fatalities and 900 further non-fatal injuries. Of the 1,724 bears and mathematical bear composites generated, 20% of them are still at large. It's noted that if during reading this document you have pondered the nature of SCP-1313 to such a degree that you feel you have independently formulated a portion of its structure, you are advised to make your way to the nearest amnestic distribution station, followed by animal control. Failure to do so may result in disciplinary action and/or bear-related injury. Spontaneously manifesting bears is pretty terrifying, which leads nicely into our next SCP, 2875, a phenomenon occurring only in a town in Wisconsin. At noon every 3 days, between 50 to 100 fully grown adult grizzly bears will appear throughout the town. They are not anomalously fast or strong or hostile, and will generally act like any other member of their species given the situation. The phenomenon appears to be cumulative, with more instances appearing every 3 days, and so it has become imperative to dispatch the new instances as quickly as possible. Currently, the only feasible means to dispatch the bears is by using a highly concentrated aerosol tranquilizer spray, followed by a blunt instrument to the cranial region. This is because killing any of them with a firearm or incendiary device results in two new instances appearing next to the corpse of the deceased one. The anomaly was discovered by Foundation containment teams sent to investigate reports about the sudden disappearance of an entire town of people. Upon arriving at the town, the situation quickly became apparent, as the town was flooded with bears. Initially, the containment teams had prepared to move them all to other habitats, but when the recurring nature of the anomaly was discovered, the current containment procedures were established. A note from the leader of the MTF states that, although plenty of them think that this is some kind of joke, a town of constantly appearing bears is serious. It was like a bear arena when they first rolled in, and that was only after a few days, so there's no telling what it could do if they let it go. We're then given a series of voicemails from a Tom Miller from City Hall, recovered from a phone found in a cave outside of the town. The first voicemail involves Tom wanting to get in touch with the individual about some things they were saying during the last town meeting. The next voicemail from Tom elaborates, talking about the pest problem they've been having with coyotes, and Tom really thinks that bears are the way they want to go. It's noted that due to the apparent connection between the origin of the anomaly and the town's government, there's potentially a link between this anomaly and SCP-3088, the Law of the Land, in which a small town in Nebraska had every law passed become an immutable law of reality. In the next voicemail, Tom says that the bears are going great, and they haven't seen any coyotes around in a little while. One of the girls in town, however, is getting a little freaked out about the bears getting a little close to town, so if they can just get the details about that ironed out, everything should be great. In the following voicemail, however, Tom and some of the other guys at City Hall are getting a little concerned that there might be a few too many bears. Most of the coyotes have moved on, so it's probably about time that they got the bears out of here. This escalates in the next voicemail from Tom, who just says that there are too many bears in town now, as a little boy got attacked the other day in the street. He needs the individual to call him as soon as they can so that they can do something about this. In the last voicemail from Tom, he says that there is a bear outside of his house, and his neighbor just got eaten by a bear. There are bears on the streets and bears in people's homes, so they gotta do something about this. He can't get outside, and he can't get to his car to get his kids from school. A bear then enters Tom's house, and the sound of a bear attacking him is heard as he yells for the individual to call him. As usual, the SCP universe is not a kind place, but if the town did indeed somehow conjure up the bears to deal with their coyote problem, perhaps that's on them. Next, we have SCP-2091. A sculpture of a grizzly bear made out of polymer clay, made in 1994. Ultrasound testing has shown cavities within the bear corresponding with the locations of organs found within normal grizzly bears, despite no biological tissues being detected, and no mechanisms to give it the ability to move. Various parts of its body have been replaced with patches of grass, and two toes replaced with materials from a watch. It is unable to move itself or perform any actions unless near SCP-2091-2, a 20-year-old woman named Abigail Harlow. Background checks and interviews reveal no apparent history of anomalous abilities in Abigail prior to the bear gaining its anomalous traits in 1998. When she is near the bear, it will display locomotion and behavioral traits commonly associated with grizzly bears, and will attempt to stay close to her whenever possible. It will also attack anything it perceives to be threatening or harmful to her, and can regenerate any damage done to its body by swallowing a variety of materials, having a preference for clay when given a choice. Abigail has claimed to be able to understand the bear, stating that it's her grandfather, and she has been observed to converse with it, although the bear has never been observed talking. A search of the house where the two were discovered revealed journals, notes, and photos belonging to a David Lennox, presumed to be Abigail's grandfather, as well as an art studio belonging to him. Obituaries dated to February 13, 1998 confirm his death, though no body has been found, and court documents show that a Jonathan Harmon is Abigail's legal guardian, a known member of the Serpent's Hand. The majority of the recovered files were deteriorated or unreadable due to poor management, but were given a journal entry from January 5th, 1998. It reads, "No reason to be cruel to your followers, and is leaving behind a granddaughter to inherit nothing but her clothing, anything but cruel. With no family to speak of except for me, she'll have no one to turn to. And may you damn me to hell if I leave sweet Abby to the destiny of adoption, one which is unforgiving and cold, as I have learned. You have seen me through those tough times, and I have no doubt that you would also help her through those tough times. But isn't the work of the Lord to lessen the suffering of his children?" A couple weeks prior, I had gone to a conference to meet with longtime friends in Cross City, for what I had then wagered to be my last time there. My physician had cleared me to go, and so long as I had Abby supervised by my friends in case of medical emergencies, I would be free to go with her there to worship. Unfortunately, I could not spend long, as most of my time was spent in the bathroom, sick and sobbing. I would not doubt that Abby was smart enough to catch on to what had happened. Jonathan had, by the intermission of the service, approached me as Abby and I were ready to head to a nearby store for groceries. He sat down with me as I sent Abby to play with Curtis and his daughter Frances. He had wondered what my plans were should I die soon. I took offense to this, as I would not leave Abby in the hands of a system so cold and cruel to children, nor leave her on her own. Yet, I had been searching for months to find a suitable guardian for her. There were no other family or friends of my son Ian, nor could I locate his wife. Though I have forgiven her, I do not know if I could ever reconcile with what she has done, nor speak or write her name. It is better for Abby to never know. What other plans could I have then? He told me that he knew of a way that could work. One of the services he had been to over in Franklin County, with a group he had referred to as the Hand, had taught him what is supposedly magic to work in accordance to the Lord's ways. I had considered it blasphemous and was ready to leave when he had handed me printouts of what was needed to be done. I read incredulously, each word making me more fearful. Could I really continue to watch over Abby? The words must have left my mouth as well, because he chuckled and nodded. There would, of course, be the issue of my sudden disappearance. He had agreed to work out that issue as well, as he would claim to be Abby's guardian, but leave me be. Could I be forgiven for casting him with a suspicious eye? Despite having known him for 40 years, since the two of us had grown up together as children, he was never particularly religious, though he informed me a few years ago he had found God again. Plus, he would be the final legal link Abby has to my family. He had encouraged me to research and to phone him my answer when I was sure. I thought about his words on the drive home. Whenever I was not tending to Abby, at the hospital, tending to my art, or sleeping, I would be constantly reading the Bible, praying, searching for an answer. I had never given up looking for the best option for her, and it is only until last night that I decided. This, then, would be the best action to take. Abigail, I hope you understand. I will not guard her any longer than I have to. And I will not cheat you, God, by staying with my spirit on earth eternally. When her time and her body is gone, I shall join her to go to you. And if... After the bear and Abigail were contained at a Foundation site, she refused to cooperate with any interviews until the decision was made to allow the two to interact with one another, with strict security measures. After spending 15 minutes together, Abigail agreed to an interview, stating that she's 16 years old at this point. The researcher asks her about an incident a couple of days ago with a burglar, to which she says that he didn't mean to hurt anyone that badly. She had to tell him to stop, and she was scared at first because she thought the burglar was going to hurt her, and the bear reacted to her crying out. He just wanted to protect her, and he eventually stopped after she told him to. She asks if the burglar is okay, to which the researcher says that he'll survive, but wonders why she's so concerned for a person that tried to break into her home and rob her. Abigail replies that maybe he needed money or food, and he could have asked. The researcher then moves on to asking what her relationship is with the bear. She says that he's her granddad, and she thinks that he used to be a person, but now he's a bear. She remembers one night before she went to bed, he told her that he'd leave but come back differently. He would be a bear, so she shouldn't be surprised when she sees a bear walking around. That was 10 years ago, and when asked why she believed him, she asks why she wouldn't believe him, as he was a bear the next day. Before he became a bear, he had taught her some things, like how to make sandwiches and cook microwave dinners, and he found books for her to read. The researcher asks if she has to cook for him, but she says that he doesn't need to eat. Sometimes when they play or when he protects her, he accidentally breaks a part of his body, but once he figured out how to fix himself by eating stuff, she got a bunch of clay for him. Their bills were paid for every month, and they would occasionally get packages from someone named Harmon, but she doesn't know who that is outside of someone her granddad knew. The researcher asks how the bear talks to her, and she says that he speaks to her mind, while she talks back with her mouth, but he can't talk to anyone else. The researcher asks if he knows where Mr. Harmon is now, so she asks the bear, who grunts in response. She says that he doesn't know anymore, and he used to be in church with him a lot, but they haven't talked since becoming a bear. Before the conversation ends, the researcher asks if the bear has anything to add, to which she relates that he's afraid that they're going to hurt her. The researcher continued the conversation for a while to ease their concerns, and the two were allowed to spend another 20 minutes together before Abigail was brought back to her cell. It's somewhat sad to think that, despite the man's attempts at being her protector for the rest of her life, his anomaly really only led to her being confined for her lifetime. Despite the Foundation's usual hands-off method of containing SCPs, I think it might be better for them to just amnesticize the girl and let her live a normal life. Moving on, we have SCP-5464, a male Syrian brown bear, which, when inactive, bears no anomalous traits and behaves in the same manner as a standard member of its species. It will activate at the inception of an event of historical or political significance to Poland. While active, it will demanifest from its current location and manifest in a place of significance to the inciting event, becoming an ongoing active participant. Though testing has found that it exhibits no signs of higher intelligence on its own, it has been found to be able to speak and coordinate its actions in such a way that benefits the country of Poland. Human subjects that are unaware of its true form, or that lack mimetic resistance, will be unable to perceive it as such, and will invariably perceive and describe it as a human of generally uniform appearance. This effect is similarly present in all media depicting SCP-5464. We're provided a brief list of confirmed 5464 manifestations, starting around the turn of the 15th century. From gathered historical data, researchers have deduced that 5464 acted as a leader of the Polish army during the Battle of Grunwald amidst the Great Teutonic War. The Legion, led by the bear, alongside an unidentified Lithuanian individual, supposedly turned the tide of the battle in favor of Polish forces. From 1463 to 1543, the bear appeared as Nicholas Copernicus and wrote the work titled On the Revolutions of the Celestial Spheres, creating the heliocentric theory in the process. Its work was branded as heresy by the Catholic Church at the time, leading to its near execution. But the execution was prevented when an unidentified German individual intervened and allowed it to escape. From 1867 to 1935, the bear appeared as Josef Pilsudski, engaging in political actions which resulted in the liberation of Poland from German and Russian occupations. It was often observed in the company of its dog, named Pies, the Polish word for dog, which it received from an unknown Russian individual. The dog did not exhibit aggressive behavior towards 5464, as opposed to other members of its species. From 1942 to 1963, it appeared as Wojtek the Bear, enlisted in the Polish military force. The platoon that it served in was funded by an unknown individual from Lithuania, and if not for said funding, the platoon would have been defeated multiple times in battle. Lastly, from 1965 to 1991, the bear appeared as Lech Walesa, and led a revolution against the socialist government of Poland, successfully overthrowing it in June of 1989. It had lost interest in any political participation by 1991, however, and following its retraction from political affairs, a foundation operative impersonating Lech Walesa was inserted in its place. Family members and relative documents were similarly fabricated. On January 1st, 2000, a message was detected within the proximity of the bear's containment cell, without any apparent source. The message reads, "Bear Report, the year of 2000. It has been a good millennium securing countries. May the next one be as good as this one. Guardian Bear Status. One intercepted by unknown individuals. Should Polish guardian bear, Wojtek, not respond within 3 months, replacement for Polish guardian bear is to be found as soon as possible. Current candidates for temporary replacements. German guardian bear, Hans. Russian guardian bear, Ivan. Due to bears not being native to all countries, and the growing number of events requiring interventions, we have decided to expand the meaning of the word bear to include honorary members of the Bear Watch. Current proposals are to use animals native to unreachable countries, such as emus for Australia, and potentially giraffes for the whole of Africa. More updates will come soon. Thank you for your cooperation. The O Bear Watch Command." There's not a whole lot of articles related to O Bear Watch, but they do seem like a reputable enough group, if not a bit eccentric. Finally, let's end with SCP-6326, a hexapedal mammal that resembles a combination of a human man and a grizzly bear, colloquially known by locals as the man bear. It's often described as having a centaur-like build, with the upper torso, front legs, and head of a bear attached to the shoulders of a white male human body, and it moves primarily by crawling on its humanoid hands and feet, although it has been observed running bipedally. It displays similar behavior to non-anomalous bears, subsisting on a diet of fish, game animals, and vegetation, as well as hibernating during winter months. Its humanoid body differs from a non-anomalous human in several ways, including possessing thicker skin, coarser body hair, slightly larger body proportions, denser bones, thicker and harder fingernails, denser muscle mass, and various differences in sizes of internal organs. Despite its possession of a partially humanoid body, it displays a level of intelligence on par with a normal bear, not appearing to have the capacity to make or use tools. The man bear regularly patrols a route considered to be the edge of its territory, and upon any attempt to remove it from this area, it will vanish and reappear at a random location within the territory. It's noted that removal from the area is upsetting to it, and upon reappearance, it will become extremely aggressive. While aggravated, it has been observed punching and kicking objects with its humanoid limbs. The man bear came to the Foundation's attention after a photo of it began circulating throughout online cryptozoology forums. All occurrences of the photo were deleted, along with other pieces of credible evidence. The town of Ader, Washington, located near its territory, has developed a deeply integrated local culture surrounding the anomaly, with themed businesses, clubs, public artwork, and a small but not insignificant tourism industry. Thanks to Foundation disinformation efforts, very few residents or visitors of the town sincerely believe that the man bear exists, treating it instead as a local legend. MTF agent Ira Watts, recently recovered from a gruesome injury resulting in the loss of an arm and an eye, reports to his superior, Dr. Geiser. Watts states that somebody made a mistake with the paperwork, and he got a briefing packet for some undercover job in a backwater cryptid fan club. Geiser tells him that no, that's his next assignment, and they're glad to have him back. Watts argues that he's way overqualified for this, and he's not going from MTF Lambda 5 to this, even with one arm and one eye. Geiser just insists that it won't be that bad, and he has to do it. Agent Watts was embedded in Ader's largest man-bear social club in order to glean some information about the man-bear's origins. The club president says that it's a special meeting today because they have a new member in their ranks, causing Watts to groan. He asks Watts to stand up and introduce himself, to which he simply says, no. But after several seconds of silence, Watts acquiesces, introducing himself as Keaton Ramsey. He states, through clenched teeth, that he's here doing preliminary research for his amateur art house documentary, because he's a film student. The president says that that sounds very interesting, and they give him a sporadic round of applause. The meeting continues from there, mostly consisting of discussion about various false theories and fabricated sightings. Afterwards, the club president tells the others to talk to Watts about their interview, and despite Watts' objection, he says that everyone will get to be in the movie. He also says that their next meeting will be a big one, as Howard is going to be there, who apparently has some spicy new evidence. Watts asks if the guy in the picture being shown is Howard, and if that's a wizard hat that he's wearing. He's told that he practically never takes it off, to which Watts sarcastically replies that that's great. Later, Watts sends an email to Dr. Geiser, requesting an assignment transfer, as he doesn't believe that he is an appropriate fit for this assignment. His skill set does not align with the responsibilities required of him here, and he strongly feels that this anomaly would be better served by someone with more experience with civilians. Geiser replies by denying his request, stating that due to the nature of his injury and how he acquired it, he is not cleared for advanced threat missions for at least several years. She understands his frustration, but this is the closest thing to fieldwork that she could get for him. Watts replies by swearing at her and stating that he hates this. We're next given a series of interviews conducted by Watts, starting with Carol Vaughn, who saw the man bear while painting a watercolor landscape. She says that she's drawn lots of pictures of the man bear, as it sticks in your mind. The first time, though, she was out painting and it wandered into her field of view, calling it a majestic thing. She shows a picture of the drawing on her phone to Watts, stating that the original is in a frame down at the local gift shop, who bought it from her for $50. Watts asks if she's positive she saw the real thing and not just a regular bear. But she says that it had human anatomy of a man, and she made sure to capture that in the drawing. Watts sees the picture and exclaims, stating that she definitely did, and she replies that it makes some folks uncomfy, but accuracy is very important to her. Another interviewee, Shaney Meyer White, documented the aftermath of the man bear's aggression following its removal and reappearance in its territory. She took multiple photos of damage to trees and shrubs, humanoid handprints, fingernail scratches, and bare paw prints, all of which were later destroyed by the Foundation. Watts asks her about her experience with the man bear, but she says that she didn't see it, just its tracks. It went berserk and shredded a bunch of trees for some reason. She doesn't have the pictures anymore, as her hard drive crashed out of nowhere and wiped them all out, right after she started talking about them. She's 99% convinced that there's some kind of Men in Black stuff going on, to which Watts dryly replies, would be crazy. Watts interviews the club president, Hunter Smith, who saw the man bear while walking his dog. He tells Watts how happy he is that Watts decided to make his movie about them. Watts says sure, and asks if he saw the man bear. Smith says that he did, and there's not much else to say about it other than his dog is afraid of bears now. Watts asks if dogs aren't normally afraid of bears, to which Smith says that they are, but now he's afraid of naked men as well. Watts then gets to interview 86-year-old Howard Berlenthenshin, who spent several years taking regular camping trips in the area surrounding the man bear's territory, in order to gather more evidence. All of his gathered print casts, drawings, and fur samples have been successfully branded as hoaxes by the Foundation, and several samples have been destroyed or vandalized as well. Watts asks him about his wizard's hat, to which he explains that it's to remind himself of his roots, that everyone thinks he's crazy, so he might as well look the part. He tried a tinfoil hat, but it irritated his scalp. He says that he was the biggest man-biologist of them all, meaning someone that studies the man bear, until they found those mushrooms. The Foundation's containment procedures involve spreading information that the man-bear's territory is home to an endangered series of mushroom. Howard says that he loves a good mushroom, so he'll stay away if it helps Mother Earth. Watts asks him about the footprints and handprints he found, wondering how he knew that it wasn't just a hoax. Howard replies that the world is weirder than that, and there's plenty of strange and magical things out there if you know where to look. Watts just says that he'll take his word for it, and Howard asks if he's going to the next meeting, as he's got some real interesting stuff to show. His granddaughter figured out how to get pictures off of his camera telephone. Watts also interviewed a few of the other members, with one stating that the man bear was inside of their house, eating their trash with its little human hands. Watts asks if it looked anything like a raccoon, to which they reply that it can change its shape. Another member recounts a dream they had in which they were playing a video game, and the man bear was there, and it was in the video game. The game was a game of their stepdad's house, and the man bear was their stepdad. They haven't figured out what it means yet, and despite Watts stating that he needs to interview other people at some point, the member continues to go on about another dream. Another member recounts them seeing the man bear running off into the woods, with it too big to be a regular bear. Watts asks if it could have been a moose, to which they say, maybe, but then they want to ask Watts a question. Watts asks if it's about his arm, but the member says no, and then Watts asks if it's about his eye. The member doesn't respond, so Watts just says he cannot. The last member asks Watts if he wonders if the man bear is extremely muscular, as it lives in the woods and hunts with its bare hands. Watts guesses so, so the member continues, stating that people say it's bigger than normal people. Watts remarks that he hopes this isn't going where he thinks it's going, leading to the member making a comment about the size of the man bear's genitalia. Watts ends the conversation by simply stating that he hates it here. Later, Watts has a video conference with Dr. Geyser, who asks him what he's wearing. Watts explains that it's man bear merch, and this is what Keaton Ramsey, documentary film student, would do. Geyser chooses to ignore all this, and asks what that person of interest had, and if any of it was interesting. Watts replies that it's all extremely interesting if you're a real fan, and the man bear was once seen flying over Ader on Christmas Eve. Geyser tells him to maybe come back when he's feeling less childish, but Watts replies that he's being very sincere right now, and taking this job very seriously. Only a serious man would be wearing all this. He's traversed splinter realities and fought subdimensional monsters with his bare hands, and this is essentially the same and not at all a waste of his abilities. Geyser just wants to know what he found out from Howard, and Watts explains that he's got really hard evidence that the man-bear was sent to Earth by aliens, being a very grainy picture on a flip phone from 2005. Geyser remarks that this is just a picture of something being thrown out of a helicopter, and she tells Watts to cut the attitude or she'll have to write him up for insubordination. Watts says that she wouldn't, and she replies only because she's genuinely worried he might be having a mental break. Watts speaks with Shaney again, who says that he's not really a film student, as he doesn't look like one. He asks if she doesn't have homework to do or something, but she just asks if he's a man in black. Watts replies by asking if she means an alien hunter from the Will Smith movie. She says that he knows what she means, but Watts just states that he is not an alien hunter from the Will Smith movie. She then asks what happened to his face, and after several seconds of silence, Watts responds, although the classified information has been expunged from the document. Following his breach of protocol, Watts was reprimanded and suspended from duty for 3 weeks, with Shaney being administered amnestics. Later, Dr. Geyser sends Watts an email, stating that she spoke with Commander Conley and he agreed not to have him fired. She's sure she doesn't need to mention that he's on thin ice, and she pleaded mental instability following his injury. That's not going to hold up forever, so he had better be a model of good behavior at his next position. She did find a new assignment for him, though, and he better not complain. She also remarks that he probably wants to know what they found out about that helicopter photo, as it's pretty fascinating, but Watts just replies that he doesn't care and he needs to know if his next assignment isn't going to be bullshit or he'll lose his mind. Geyser replies by asking how he feels about working with children, to which Watts replies by asking how she feels about his 2-week notice. Sadly, we'll never get to know what exactly was so fascinating about the helicopter photo, or where exactly the man bear came from, but perhaps some things are not for mankind to know. Although that last article was specifically written to be humorous, there's something inexplicably funny about bears in comparison to a lot of other animals. Take any of these articles and replace the bear with a lion, for example, and they just don't seem quite as lighthearted. Also, there seems to be a noticeable bias across bear-related SCPs towards brown bears specifically. And while I don't want to get into a discussion about what kind of bear is best, I feel like other species could use some more representation.